All right. Let's go ahead and reconvene the Forest Practice Board meeting. We are at the 1:15 time on the agenda, where we are at the Forest and Fish Policy Annual Report. Jim and Stephen, you could both come forward, please. Introduce yourselves and for board members, this report is in the vanilla folder that was handed to you this morning. It's not in the packet.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and board members, staff, and public. I'm Stephen Burnett, and I'm talking to you during this agenda item as co-chair of the policy group, the Forest and Fish. And as you know, every year, policy comes to you suggesting what our priorities, what the policy priorities will be. And our report the last two or three years have been pretty much the same. We've had funding as an issue. We've had Clean Water Act assurances as an issue and implementing our strategic plan as an issue. And then we've had some below that line. So in your packet, there's three documents because we're going to change horses on you, but we don't have a final work list this time around. So what I wanted to point out is there's the cover memo, and then attached to the cover memo, there's two other documents, spreadsheets. One is completed tasks over the course of policy since at least 2007, when we started probably tracking it. And then the ongoing draft list. And something that you should be aware of, this last year, the policy co-chairs, along with the CEMER co-chairs, worked really hard to take some of the outcomes that came out of the Stillwater report last year, as well as the training from that everybody has had, including yourselves. We kept track of all the questions and comments from training on the adaptive management program, and we took all that information and decided, are they just comments? Are these things that we need to work on? And who needs to work on? And what we've done is we've added some of the things that we think we need to at least have a discussion about at the very least, and added it to our work list. But we have not reprioritized our work list. And one of our partners this last policy meeting, instead of saying, yeah, let's just do the same thing we did the last 2 years, suggested that we redo the work list to reflect a couple of things. One is the different kinds of priorities that are facing us. Some of our implementation policy priorities, some of them are science-based priorities. Some of them are, okay, what's, is this in or out of forest and fish type priorities, et cetera. So we're going to come back to you at the latest by November. Hopefully we can put something together before then so that you can think about it. A new list. The other thing we want to do with this list is detail out some of these priorities, because as Mark Hicks showed you this morning, you know, there are many different tasks under the Clean Water Assurances. And we want to make sure that when we say this is the list of priorities we want to tackle this coming year, that it really is the actual list of priorities that we want to tackle this next year. Not clean. We all know Clean Water Act assurances is a fairly high priority, as everybody suggested earlier today. But what of those priorities are we going to tackle? And so we want to be more specific about that. It'll do two things. One, it'll be specific about which ones we want to take on, and then it'll also help you also understand the extent of the list we have in front of us. And given that extent and the limited resources, the challenge we have as resources continue to become limited to actually move forward on some of these things. I want to spend just, so that's what we're going to provide you at the next meeting or before the next meeting. The other thing I wanted to comment is we've also, although we have tried to help our principals have discussions about the funding priority, you know, we realize it's the principals that really have to have that discussion, and we're there to support them in a supporting role. And we'll continue to do that. And as you'll see in this memo, we feel like, at least for the adaptive management program, that I would suggest there are other needs, such as participation grants, pass-through monies, that need to continue to be funded at some level so that everybody can play at the table and we're all working together to move forward. As Mark indicated this morning, it's really hard to go out looking for soft money to help fund the adaptive management program if you don't even have the money to do the study design to figure out what you would go and get funded. So that's a real concern. And I guess the two other comments. My boss, or Ted Stern, the director of the agency, has made it really clear to some of the other principals that he's willing to put effort into this now. And and I think that he's getting a positive response from some of the other principals. So we have some forward movement. I think that the governor made a commitment to the tribes as well to deal with the participation grant issue this year. So, you know, maybe, you know, all the planets are starting to align to finally think about that. Finally, just a reminder to all of you, most of the people who sit on policy and sit on CMER are not full-time committed to just those issues. And the work that we do, many of us have multiple hats. Some of us work the legislature, some of us work Forest Practices Board, some of us do policy, some of us do science, some of us do two or three of those, all of those things, and not to mention just operating on the ground and making sure things happen on the ground to protect public resources. So that's just a reminder of the realities we're facing right now. And that's pretty much what I have to say.
Good afternoon. Jim Peters, Northwest Indian Fish Commission. This will be my last time coming in front of you as co-chair because I'm going to have to step down because of the budget cuts. The tribes have taken a, you know, substantial hit, and even before this last go around, we were doing more with less, and now we're doing less. And so we've had to make some tough decisions, and part of that is my role, at least on policy, will be focusing strictly on tribal priorities in that process. The tribes have in the past been participants in other priorities that might not necessarily be on that top level of the tribes, but for the importance of the process, we have devoted some time and resources into those other subgroups and meetings. But again, because of the cuts, we have to back that down. With that being said, what our workload, all of us, the state agencies, policy, forest and fish group, is, again, doing more with less. Or what we might not have to do is make some tough decisions on, based on these priorities as they come forward to you, is that we might have to just focus on some and do it right the first time with the amount of people. I know in our tribal arena, we put a lot of pressure on our staff, and they're very dedicated, but we have to be careful that those dedicated staff people aren't, we're not asking too much for them because they do have a family life. They have another life other than their careers. And what we've seen in the past, if we put too much pressure on the great employees that we have, maybe some of the outputs that they get aren't as good, or they start getting very frustrated, or they start looking outside to do something else, and we start losing those people. So the funding issue is key, and the tribes have tried to work with the lands commissioner and the governor the last few months to really look at this funding, and we've gone however many years that Forest and Fish has been here, and still does not have a full long-term funding for the adaptive management program. And this year, the Forest and Fish account that was specifically set up to fund tribes was, they took $1 million out of that to fund that thing. Right now, the tribes are looking at what they're going to be doing this coming up year. Next year, it might even be less, but in some cases, they might be able to absorb some of it. In other cases, you're going to clearly see that tribal involvement in this process decrease. And so we believe our role in this Forest and Fish agreement is critical, along with some of the priorities that we're going to be dealing with in the next meeting, to secure the HCP out there that everybody has agreed is important for the state. And so by saying that, you know, we have less people to do a lot of work that we already have here, and so we need to make some tough decisions when new initiatives come forward. That's about all I had. So.
Well, thank both of you. Stephen, it's a pleasure to see you. All of us as both, I know, just DNR staff, but also as a board, are pleased to see you back. So welcome back. And Jim, thank you for your service. I'm sorry that you will be continuing as co-chair. It's been great having you in that role. We certainly understand. We're down almost 26 people in the last 2 years, and we understand that you do have to do less with less, and that it makes for very difficult choices. But I do want to thank you for your service, because it has been really beneficial to the system. So thank you for that. I think we will see, and I know from our conversations internally at DNR and coordination with ecology, we know funding is a top priority for our principals to be involved in, and I think you'll see conversations starting pretty soon to start looking at how we're going to address that. So it's not falling on deaf ears. So questions for the policy co-chairs on the annual report? Which sounds like we'll get it next meeting to read between the lines.
Right.
So I guess my request back to you would be to, I appreciate the recognition that it is the principals who have been doing the primary work on funding, and the more you can do on prioritization to help bring that forward, so that when the board is having its work planning meeting next time, you know, I think that will be well synchronized, so that we can make sure that we're on the same page as far as prioritization, because clearly we have to tackle those most important things first. Any other comments or questions for policy? Okay. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have the Cultural Resources Annual Report. Pete Heide and Jeffrey Thomas, please come forward. Good afternoon, Pete.
Good afternoon. While we're waiting for Jeff to come up here, I want to thank you all for this opportunity, and welcome Bridget to the board as chair. This has been quite a nice meeting so far, right on time, perfectly. So we're ready to go here. My name is Peter Heide. I'm the co-chair of the Cultural Resources Roundtable.
And I'm Jeffrey Thomas, the director of the Gulf Tribes Timber, Fish, and Wildlife Program, and the other co-chair of the TFW Cultural Resources Roundtable. Thank you for hearing our annual report today. We've divided it up so that we can all report on the 2011 work activities, and Peter will talk a little bit about what you can expect for the upcoming FY 2012 year. I know that we've given you a written copy of our annual report, and so I'll just touch upon some of the highlights and entertain questions later should you have some. Now, it starts out by talking about what our main topics were for the year, and so it's a little bit of a summary. I mentioned that we worked on a roundtable charter, a rule language proposal for 222-2120, and general guidance documents for protecting and managing cultural resources. We've also provided the quarterly and the annual reports on each occasion that that's been available at the Forest Practices Board quarterly meetings. So those are considered to be some of our priority work efforts for the year. And when it came to the charter, we felt that it was important because we wanted to ensure that the roundtable, the Cultural Resources Roundtable, does have an overall identity and a meaningful structure to be used for undertaking work. So you'll see those kinds of provisions there within the charter. When it comes to the 2120 rule language revisions, our goal was to clarify expectations and procedures that apply when you fulfill the requirements of that WAC. When it comes to the guidance documents, we wanted to ensure that useful tips, tools, and educational material that is specific to state and private forest land situations are available to use when needed. And so you'll be hearing more about that because a lot of that is still in development. Maybe to just highlight a few things within the roundtable charter. This was work that had begun in fiscal year 2010, and to finalize it, the roundtable did collaborate with the DNR Forest Practices Division and produced the charter that the board did accept during the May 2011 quarterly meeting. We still want to thank you for that once again because it's really meant a lot to our group. When it comes to the roundtable charter, it mentions that the purpose of the roundtable is to foster cooperative protection and management of cultural resources, as was envisioned in the Cultural Resource Protection Management Plan. And also that the roundtable is there to serve the needs of the board. It's to provide insight on cultural issues affecting forest practices, provide consensus rulemaking, recommendations for the board's consideration, and 2120 is an example of that, and also to annual report on behalf of the department, the DNR itself, on how implementation of the Cultural Resources Protection Management Plan is working. That's also according to WAC, so we see that as a responsibility. Moving on to the 2120 rule revision topics, that was work that was begun in fiscal year 2009 and was completed in 2011 with the completion of a final recommendation that the board will be hearing more about today and has already heard about before. The roundtable did consider different drafts of possible rule language that when they finally produced, that did result in a version that was finally presented to the board and accepted at the May 2011 quarterly meeting for distribution to the DFW counties, tribes for the 30-day review, and that was is something that's happened since the last quarterly meeting of the board. And so again, it's on the agenda later today. The comments were received during the 30-day review, and they were considered by the roundtable at its June meeting. And the overall objectives for the rule change proposal work was to clarify ambiguous language and resolve issues with the rules landowner tribe meeting requirement, as well as issues related to tribal sovereignty. So those are some general objectives. Those are what was identified in the CR101 that went out with the original announcements, as well as the 30-day review. Maybe more specific objectives that the roundtable group itself focused upon were to address issues relating to tribal sovereignty, as well as potential tribal non-response to landowner requests for meetings, or just stronger provisions for how it would be demonstrated that a good faith effort to contact and work with tribes had been made by the landowner so that they could present that back to the agency, the DNR. Maybe the last thing I'll talk about then is the guidance documents, and you'll be hearing more about that from Peter. But during 2011, we continued our efforts to specify and produce the guidance certain guidance documents that can be used for implementing the Cultural Resource Protection Management Plan. I hope most of you remember the CRPMP, affectionately known to us as the CREP, that otherwise is a document that had been approved as of August 03 in its initial form and was modified somewhat in 08 based upon revisions the roundtable then at that time the committee had recommended. And we also want to produce guidance documents that can be help, it can be used when implementing other state forest practices, statutes, and rules as well, so it's not just the CRPMP. The overall, we decided that the guidance documents we'd be preparing, and of course you'll be hearing more about them from Peter, is for the purpose of either being included in the Forest Practices Board Manual, and we know that's a separate effort that's really getting a lot of emphasis for the 2012 calendar year. And we're not trying to tie onto that as much as, at this point, take advantage of the availability of the website, which is something else I think the Roundtable Group really wants to thank the board for seeing. Finally brought to a reality and available, and is now as such now available for all TFW stakeholders to appreciate and benefit from. But so we're trying to focus where we're going to go with these guidance documents, where would they be available to people, what's the right document for the right kind of platform, whether it's the board manual or the website. But they will be addressing specific topics that include general info about cultural resources and FPAs, summarizing rules and statutes, providing examples of cultural resources, describing site types that are within the forest, sites and objects that might fall under the Class 4 special ruling, better, more meaningful information about tribal contact listings, expectations for the tribal annual meeting, tips for completing a site protection plan, protocols for human remains discovery, ways in which you can document the 2120 meeting, as well as letters for implemented that might serve as templates for implementing some of the 2120 expectations. So with that, I'll go ahead and leave it for Peter to talk about our 2012 activities.
Well, first let me just remind the board who participates in this in the roundtable. We have a department Archaeology and Historic Preservation, Indian tribes, or two or three tribes that are regular attendees, landowners, or large landowners are well represented. We have state lands, interestingly enough, one of the few times we actually get state lands involved with things that we do around forest practices, which is very good. We do have a little bit of a hole in our group. We used to have good participation from the small landowner community, but that seems to have fallen off lately, and hopefully we can see some of that come back. Okay, so for 2012, Jeffrey mentioned, we are still working on the what we call our manual website guidelines. And I'm getting pretty excited about this because I really think that this is where our real advantage, real benefits can come from. It ties into the training issues and information and knowledge. And I'd really like to see us be able to do this on the website, but we're gonna need some help with that. I'll talk about that in just a minute. Fundamentally, it's a matter of early identification, early knowledge and identification of where and what a cultural issue might be, and that's where it all begins, and that's where we want to be able to use the guidance to help out with. One of the things that was brought up to the group was the fact that some of the current guidance that's given to landowners through the regional, instructions, forest practices instructions, some of the SEPA guidelines, and some of the stuff that goes on, you know, comes out from the regional folks, may need some review and updating, and we're going to make that one of our goals for the fiscal year 2012. I mentioned education, and this is an area where we've not been terribly active. There are some things going on around the state, but we believe we really have to reach out to those folks that are involved with state-regulated forest practices and forest practices permitting, and do a better job of reaching out and getting those people up to speed. It's really a matter of getting all of the resource professionals on the same page. We've got a lot of biologists in the woods, we've got foresters in the woods, we've got engineers in the woods, and everybody's walking around. And cultural resources are out there, they're around, they need to be recognized when they're discovered, when they're present, and then we need to apply the remedies that we have. I'm just going to close by saying that we do this, this small group. We have, six or maybe at the most eight people that show up regularly. They all work for somebody else, and they all do some of this work when they have time. And that's why it doesn't get done really fast. And this project we have of putting guidance together is a big one. And when we get it all written, we are not communication experts. We would really be able to use some help taking this massive material that we intend to produce and get it into a format that people will really use. And hopefully, maybe the department can help us out there. So with that, we'll answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you, Jeffrey. Questions?
Okay. I have a question. I know you've got really a lot on your plate as it is. I'm just wondering if you've got, if you anticipate a point at which you might be able to do some kind of effectiveness review on how this is working. Because I mean, it seems like you got some good stuff going, but how do you know unless you get the feedback?
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting question. We're dealing with things that are not easily measured. I think we try to go out to the cooperators and say, how's it working for you? And we don't get a lot of feedback, but most of the feedback we've gotten has been positive. But then, of course, the people we're not getting to are not, don't even know that they need to respond, so that's kind of a problem. Jeff, I don't know if you have any ideas to respond to that.
Yeah, it's a very worthwhile inquiry for sure. I would like to see cultural resources added to the suite of topics that are considered through the compliance monitoring program. Right now, we haven't any placeholder for that, and it would be good for everybody to gain a stronger sense of what compliance monitoring might be when it comes to these statutes, regulations, policies, or other documents relating to cultural resource protection management and use by TFW stakeholders. I also believe that just to draw off of the ideas of, that are already in place for other TFW topics, that rule effectiveness monitoring is certainly a worthwhile topic and is probably greatly underserved when it comes to the cultural resources topic or the resources themselves. What are we getting when it comes to the rule, and how do we know it's effective, and what are we supposed to be monitoring if we do that, as well as the rule implementation tools, which we believe that we're working on a lot more now. Without the benefit of a distinct and recognizable tie to the otherwise pretty firmly established adaptive management program. So cultural resources is not included under the adaptive management umbrella that I know of, let alone all of its different pathways and possibilities. And then finally, when it comes to education, which has a little bit to do with rule effectiveness, what are you supposed to effective in doing what? Well, it's at least what might be captured under an educational concept is what's necessary or appropriate. And so in the way that in the old days of TFW, we had groups like the Training Information Education Subcommittee that would help put shape and form to the idea of educating or training or otherwise providing information about cultural resources. We're not benefiting from that kind of broad-based TFW stakeholder input right now. We're just figuring out how that works for us at the roundtable level and hopefully obtaining meaningful input from the board on how what they believe that looks like as well. But to me, those are all really worthwhile areas to explore and could offer even greater benefits to cultural resource protection and management if we do.
Sorry, I've got a question. Do you happen to know whether or not they have cultural resource training in the accredited logging program?
I doubt it. I don't know, though.
I know that might be a good...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
Touch bases with that. Jerry, because, you know, the loggers are pretty much the first ones on the scene.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about looking at
that.
Cultural resources is covered in the contract loggers training.
Is it? Okay, yes. Thank you.
All right. Sorry about that. I don't know everything.
Serious?
Not me.
We get that on the record.
It's on the record. Other questions or comments regarding cultural resources roundtable? Well, I heard your request about support for materials. We'll obviously discuss that internally. And your additional
we're
request.
Not quite ready yet.
Pardon me?
We're not quite ready.
Not quite.
But yeah. But
okay. We did hear it, so we'll see what we can do. Thank you very much. Appreciate you both being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Okay, next item on our agenda is the low-impact template. Mark, if you could come on up, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the board. I'm Mark Engel with the DNR. I'll give you a brief update on the low-impact template. You've heard comment about it today. It is true that one of the charges of the DNR and the Small Forest Landowner Office is to develop alternate plan templates for inclusion in Board Menu 21 for small forest landowners to be able to apply on the ground alternate plans that are frequently used. Part of the challenge is that a template has to be something that is easy to understand and can be applied in a fairly broad geographic area. The goal of the state caucus effort to develop a low-impact template was to provide small forest landowners an alternate plan template that can be broadly applied in both western and eastern Washington. The riparian rules in eastern Washington are very hard to understand, so one of our primary goals was to make them, to simplify them and make it fairly easy to understand for landowners. Our goal was to provide a template where landowners need only measure the width and the length of the RMZ and then measure the trees within and basically apply the number of trees that are listed in a table that's pertinent for the size of the trees. So it's a very large attempt to simplify the template. In the template, and this again is a draft template that has been presented to the federal services, the tribes, and the Conservation Caucus prior to a presentation to the small forest landowners, specifically the WFFA Policy Committee. We incorporated the second template in the board manual, which was the fixed width template, which was developed by policy and approved by the board. That would be the buffer width. As you recall, that was a weighted average over what large landowners could realize in option two of DFC, which is the pack and whack, or locating trees closest to the water. In addition to that, we have added the element of allowing landowners to thin within the inner zone. So where a large landowner can choose either option one or option two if they meet DFC, this template would allow both to take place within the riparian zone. Let's see. I'm pretty much done. Anyway, WFFA has expressed a desire to complete a template in some form. Again, this is draft. Our goal is to present the template to the Small Forest Landowner Advisory Committee, or if we're unable to do that, for the board to convene a stakeholder group and continue to work on the template. As Ken Miller said earlier today, we do want this to be presented to the board for consideration for inclusion in Board Manual Section 21, which is the alternate plan board manual dedicated to small forest landowners. So do you have any questions?
Thank you, Mark. I want to thank you. I know this has been a long road ahead, and I've been keeping the pressure up on this one to get to this day so that all of the meetings that Mark just described have happened prior to today's board meeting. We did not want to come back to another board meeting and say, we're really working hard. So I thank you for that. With that, maybe open it up for questions, comments. Yeah.
I have a question. It's a little perhaps esoteric, but Ken Noah brought it up this morning, or mentioned it as an example. He was trying to describe the challenge between meeting rules versus some more practical application of functions on the ground. And one example he provided was directional fall. And I didn't know what that is. I wondered if you could tell me what that issue is. It sounds like trying to place large woody debris into the stream, I was guessing.
That is an option that we had discussed. The approach that we took was...
So is that what that is?
Yeah,
referring
that
to
would
is
be,
intentionally placing large woody debris into the riparian?
That is an option that individuals could use to directionally fall trees to place large woody debris in the water and immediately adjacent to it. It also is a way in which somebody could cut closer to the water and be able to remove the timber without taking equipment in that zone. I mean, there's a dual purpose in directional falling. Our goal for this template was, and again, we have taken a somewhat conservative approach because, again, we have to protect the public resources while providing for a viable industry. And so the thinning that we took, or actually we proposed a relative density of 50, which is a little bit higher than some would like to thin to. But in doing so, we do not see the need to have landowners manufacture down woody debris or standing snags. The stand would be able to naturally do this as the stand continues to grow. So we did not build in any sort of component for to contribute to downwood or snags. And again, we believe that this template will provide riparian function.
Sherry.
Didn't sound like Ken was very optimistic this morning. where's the tweaking at? That's going to make it a template that WFFA will buy into.
Again, this is draft. It's a starting point. We're hoping that we'll have a healthy dialogue. There were some tweaking that we saw immediately when we made the presentation. For example, in Eastern Washington, we need to reduce the stand density to fall closer to the rule. But other points of clarification for tweaking. But we're at the point now where we have an excellent draft template from which all stakeholders can discuss modification to the template to meet the riparian function and to provide volume to smalls.
What happened to the patch cut concept?
The patch cut concept, when we looked at the patch cut concept, we had to look at the...
Can you tell me what that is?
Yes, can you define that for folks?
I guess I'm too close.
I'm sorry. I guess.
Yes.
In the original low-impact template presented to all of the stakeholders, the smalls had introduced the potential to have small clear cuts within the RMZ. And when we looked at it and we looked at the total width of the RMZ, being that we are using the fixed width now, which are much narrower RMZs, and the fact that we want to leave the 50-foot core intact, it is such a narrow band that the clear cuts in our eyes became first impractical, and second, it's reducing the riparian function beyond the point of comfort at this time. So we wanted to embrace a thinning throughout the inner zone.
So you didn't talk about string length as far as catch cuts. DOE did some work on string length and what affected string temperature, and 500 feet seemed to be right in the range of not being too risky for the low impact. So there was not that discussion.
No, there wasn't. And well, actually, early on, yes, there was. Where the state caucus wanted to go is the creation of a template that we could take directly to the board and not take to into the adaptive management process to policy. When you're talking trying to decide the length of an RMZ that could be totally clear cut, That's we believe that was a topic that would have to go into the adaptive management process.
I think I want to talk to you offline.
Certainly.
Obviously, a lot of detail in this template. Other questions? So next process steps are to move ahead, present that to the Small Horse Landowner Advisory Committee, and possibly back here at the board in November for further dialogue.
We are hoping.
Okay. Let's keep the optimistic approach going there. I think we did hear in testimony this morning, obviously, a frustration from Ken Miller on the status of where it is, and Chris Mendoza's point about the difference between an alternate plan and a template, and the need for the template to have broader utility. So I know we have been trying to make this work so that it is a reasonable alternative, but keep at it.
Okay.
All right, so we'll look forward to an update next time.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, our next agenda item is a forest biomass update, which I will provide. I think all of you might recall from my past meeting, sitting on the other side of the table, providing an update on a work group that the commissioner asked me to convene, which brings together folks that are interested in looking at forest biomass, and this has been considered sort of the biomass part two group. So we first updated the rules to ensure that biomass harvest was a forest practice activity that is now within the rule book, and now we are looking ahead to see if our rules as we have them now are adequate for biomass activities. I think I mentioned last time too, there's sort of two schools of thought on this one, and we're trying to get to the bottom of sort of all points of view, but on one perspective you have folks that I think all folks around the table recognize that we don't have a large biomass industry in the state right now, so we're not really seeing a strong demand for biomass, for logs or other material to go into a biomass facility. However, there is a concern that with large investments, or if the markets change into a more favorable, if they change to a more favorable approach for biomass harvest, that perhaps the industry could get ahead of where the regulations are. So there was a request to evaluate whether our rules are or are not sufficient should biomass harvest ramp up. We do have on the forest practices application a question if biomass harvest will be occurring, so we will be tracking that as part of our application review system. The work group that I've convened, it meets monthly. It's quite an aggressive timeline. We have a schedule that essentially started back in April, I believe, if not earlier, where we essentially started with an analysis of what the rules say now. So we had a series of meetings, and the first one was what we went sort of rule by rule by rule through, and thank you, Mark, for that, an analysis of all the rules that may apply to biomass harvest activities, and where what exactly those rules say and how they would be interpreted for biomass activity. We then went out for a field trip recently, and thank you, Norm, for hosting us on your property to help educate everybody as to what does this look like on the ground, what type of equipment is used, what are certain retention schemes look like after a harvest has occurred, etc. So I know that was a very educational day. The next step in our work schedule is to bring together a list of what would be proposed BMPs. There are a number of national and international documents that have been put out that show BMPs in different parts of the world. We have a compilation, we have a day scheduled for an evaluation of a compilation of those BMPs
And then after that, we're going to go segment by segment through the rule book again with a particular focus on each area, whether it's roads or water or every segment. So first we did sort of a broad overview, got out in the field, educated ourselves. Now we're going to look at sort of if we thought we needed something, what would that be? And then we're going to take a step back and go segment by segment through each of the rural areas that look, that may have an interrelationship with biomass harvest, and really get sort of drilled down to make sure that the rules are adequate for what we believe we need, and if not, what that may look like. And when we get to the end of that process, which is next spring, we will report back to the board in May, I believe it is, with an analysis and any recommendations that may come out of that. Those work group meetings are open to the public. They're posted on the Forest Practices webpage. We've had people from the public show up and observe, and I would welcome all participants that are interested. Our next meeting is this month, coming up shortly. I don't recall exactly when it is, but again, it's posted on 19th. And that's where we'll be looking at what types of BMPs, if folks thought we did need them, what would those look like? Because I think there's been this question of what we have for a rule set right now, what would that difference be between what we have versus what we might need, so that we can kind of get a sense of what the scope of any changes might be. So that's the next step. We do have the entire work plan up on the Forest Practices webpage as well, so if you have an interest in that, you can see the whole year is scheduled already. So we have field trips already set up as well, so I encourage those that have an interest in looking there and participating as you wish. Any questions? Norm.
Just a comment more than a question. It seemed like the missing piece in this that I mentioned before is there an issue of existing or significantly potential resource damage? Given the rule set that we have right now, I can certainly understand the need to look at BMPs, especially if there's a resource risk. If there's not a resource risk that can be pointed at, then it seems superfluous. And so I would strongly suggest that this group seek whatever information is available they can on what those resource risks are as part of this discussion and part of whatever recommendation may come back.
I would agree.
Yes, or comment? Yeah. Sure, we missed it. I was just going to say, Norm, I think that that was the purpose of doing this phase, is just to do that analysis, make sure that we do have what we need in place if we do want to have a growing economy in the state for biomass. And just wanted to thank DNR's leadership again on this issue. So,
and if I may, I just didn't hear that in the next steps, you know, going to BMPs and then going back to the board. It seemed like that was a missing piece in there, because I haven't seen it come forward yet, and I'm not sure where it was going to come forward. So hopefully that will be an explicit part.
I expect that it will be. My belief is that the BMP is, the analysis of BMPs is that next step, and then as we go segment by segment through the rules, we'll be looking at what risk that rule is preventing, or what its outcome is seeking to achieve, and then knowing what we know about biomass harvest, is that still sufficient given this new type of operation as well. But it will be a risk-driven conversation. Yeah. Thank you for that clarification. Other questions from the board on biomass? Okay, and we'll provide the updated work plan remains on the website. I think we get enough paper when we with the board packet. I can provide that if the board so wishes, but it is available and it's updated all the time, so that information is available. Okay. Our next agenda item is public commenting on our road maintenance and abandonment planning rulemaking and board manual.
And we have two individuals signed up for comment. Chris Mendoza is first.
I think I might have put my name up there on the wrong sheet. So.
No. Not for our maps? Okay.
30 seconds.
Okay. You don't have to.
Just say yes.
If you want me up here, yes. Okay. I guess I'll just repeat what I said earlier today, and that was that the work groups that were formulated, the technical work groups and DNR staff that worked on this were very helpful, and it took a lot of everyone's time, and people provided that time. And so I guess the spin I'll put on it is that when the policy group and the board and the technical groups, when people get their heads around an item that they really want to work on, it'll get done, and it'll happen. We'll make it happen, and I think this is an example of a case where it did. And I think washer analysis is another case. So I think I'm hopeful in that regard that some of the other issues that people see that are lingering and have been lingering for years, that you know people can get things done if they choose so. So hopefully that will start a new trend here. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Chris. Stephen Burnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Stephen Burnett. I'm representing Ecology at this time. And so I just wanted to, you know, it was 2 years ago this summer that the landowners came to the state and said, you know, we've got this economic issue and we're concerned about roads and it's still a priority for us. And, you know, it was subsequent to a rather challenging legislative session, and we appreciated the landowners going out and initially putting some money into a facilitator's time, and then of course other people passed the hat to help finish that off. So it's a two-year process, and we appreciate DNR's leadership on this issue because they really stepped up to the plate. And what I wanted to point out is there's actually potentially four clean water milestones, two that will actually hopefully happen in implementation of this, and then two that we will see. But there were four milestones. One is a recommitment by principals for funding for the program. Two was a recommitment to accelerate the forest and fish, the triple F2P program, the family forest, fish passage program. Anyway, and to look for money to also do an inventory to see what kind of issues we have on small land and roads. And then the two directly associated with the action that you will probably take today is one is to make sure we have better tracking of exactly where we are with our maps, not just as the whole program, but with regards to individual landowners. And finally, that there was a better stakeholder involvement as these our maps are tracked, particularly as landowners come forward, ask for an extension, give us an update on where they're at and how they're going to proceed out to however long they ask for. So we appreciate everybody's involvement. I think, as Chris said, this is a success. And certainly Ecology is committed to make this one of their priorities here as these extensions start rolling in. So, and we hope that some landowners won't be asking for them and they'll get their work done completed, and we want to give them a big star as well. So anyway, thank you very much.
Steve, I've got a quick question for you. Has Aaron ever filed any request for funding from the Feds in cost share program?
Yes. I mean, the caucuses all work together. We put together a publication. It was a four-page publication that we used to take to DC, and I haven't talked to Aaron for about 2 months to see, but as my, I don't, unless, do you have an update on where we're at on that?
Aaron was back in D.C. last week, continuing to seek that that funding. Tough climate, as you can imagine, especially while he was there. Not a lot of opportunity to talk about non-debt ceiling issues, but he continues to push that. He didn't feel like he had, he didn't get a yes, but he hasn't gotten a firm no, so he thinks he's got a few leads that he's continuing to work on, but nothing firm just yet. I spoke with Aaron, who was the state forester, for those who don't know him. He's going to come before the board in November and one, for an introduction so the board can meet the state forester, and two, to possibly talk about his role. And he's not only state forester, but also our federal policy liaison, and talk about the work he does both on forest stewardship as well as funding opportunities. But as of yet, he hasn't been able to obtain any funding. He continues to work.
And that request was through the Farm Bill, right?
Yeah, through the Farm Bill, but he was looking at sort of turning over every other rock as well.
I see.
Yeah, we initially, both the governor and the commissioner, I believe, sent letters to secretaries of transportation, commerce, interior, and ag.
Right.
And we got responses back from 2 or 3 out of 4, I believe. And none of them said absolutely no, and some were more positive than others. And so Aaron's sort of the guy on the front end trying to chase down potential opportunities.
Great. We'll see.
Continuing to work again. Okay, so our next three agenda items we're going to handle concurrently. These are the RMAP process, the rulemaking, and the board manual. As we went through this last time, it was clear that folks had questions about each of those, and so we're going to have Darren and Mark and Donnell come up and walk through each of those together, and then we will move on after that to the rulemaking. So each of these pieces is tied to another piece, and we thought doing one separately might just lead to questions about the other. So with that, Darren, go ahead.
Good afternoon. As Madam Chair stated, there's a lot of material here, and it's all somewhat connected. So I think what we'll do is first a bit of an orientation to what's in your packet, and then I'll talk a little bit generally about where we were at the last meeting versus where we are today, and how what you have in your packet is different. Then we'll go into the rule, the board manual, and circle back to the forms. I think that's probably the best way in sequence to make sense of all this. So in your packet, in order, and we're not going to actually present it in this order, but this is the order that's in your packet, there's the cover memo, and then a bunch of pages of instructions followed by the forms. That's about 20 pages worth. Beyond that, you'll get into the accomplishments report, which, while not necessarily related to your action today, it is a report that's done annually about what occurred last year. This was intended to be TUMA, but we just didn't make it, so we included it here. The next piece is the draft rule language, followed by the public comments that were received during the hearings, as well as written comments and the concise explanatory statement. At the back of that is the cost-benefit analysis and the small business economic impact statement, which is a requirement for rulemaking, followed finally by the board manual. So those are all the items that we'll try to walk through, and we won't try to read them all, but we'll touch on the high points. So to get things started, if you recall at the last meeting, we had the draft rule language, but we were still working on the board manual and the forms. And there was quite a bit of discussion about what you all needed in order to take this, consider the request and take this action today, and landed on that you definitely needed the board manual, obviously, but you also would like to see the forms. So there was a lot of work done in between the last board meeting and this board meeting, with our staff as well as all the stakeholders that participated, to get the board manual finalized and have the whole package supported by the forms, which were added into Rule. If you recall, the board wanted the standardization of forms referenced in the Rule. So that's all been done. Just by way of a quick review, I wanted to remind you of some of the things we uncovered when we embarked on this whole process about RMFs and the improvements we needed to make. And they're listed on page 2 of the cover memo, so you can follow along. So one of the things that we found we needed to do was apply consistent interpretation to the elements that we report on annually. There was some variability in how those things were measured across the state. We wanted to make sure that we were measuring them the same way in all regions of the state so that when it's rolled up into a report, it makes sense and it actually reflects what's happening out on the ground. In order to do that, of course, you need to standardize how that data is collected. So that's number 2, and that's what's what you'll see in the forms in a bit. We needed a better way for our field folks to track implementation, as well as a way to minimize their running around in the field to try to see what's going on with all the different landowners that they have responsibility for tracking on our maps. So we're working on creating a statewide database that's going to be spatial as well as tabular that our RMF specialists will be able to use in the field in a real-time sense to track implementation, make updates in real time, and have available with them when they are planning their work days, their work weeks, work months, so that they're efficient with how they allocate their time in the field. We added some reporting items to get a better bead on where we are with regard to worst first and even flow. And those three are listed under number 5. Total number of barriers identified in each RMAP, total miles of forest road needing improvement, and the percentage of road improvement by road management block, which is typically what large landowners do. They break up their RMFs into different blocks. So those three you'll see reflected in either the report that's in your packet today or by next year. All of those elements will be reported on in a standardized form. So that's what we uncovered when we did the operational review, which obviously led to all of the materials that are in your packet. And I'm going to flip to the back of the instructions section to the forms to just briefly orientate you to that. The instructions follow the cover memo, and if you go to about page 15 in those instructions, the first form, if I can find it, you'll come to, is the extension request form. Is everybody there? So this is something that each landowner that requests an extension will need to fill out. Just briefly, landowner contact information, the period for extension, the summary of the current RMAP status, the percent improvement complete by management block, which I just mentioned is on the back page, and then an approval-disapproval section on that form. So that's the extension request form. The next one is the storm maintenance and routine maintenance form. And this is basically just a checklist of different BMPs that landowners can use for routine as well as storm maintenance. That's to be turned in with each extension request and was also turned in with the original RMAP back in 2001 through 2002. The next form is the form we're going to use to help get a better bead on prioritization. And it's entitled the Road Management Block Prioritization Track. So this is a form that contains a method for prioritizing RMAP work and implementing the lowest first principle in a more clear and consistent way. The next form is the annual accomplishment and work planning report. Now this is a slightly revised form that all landowners will use from here forward, regardless of whether they're requesting an extension or not. Much of the same information that's on the extension request form, but it basically provides landowners an opportunity to tell us what they're going to do in the upcoming year, as well as what they accomplished in the previous year. And this will give us a clear way to track implementation and even flow over whatever performance period the landowners choose.
Darren, that's only for the large landowners.
That's correct.
Or
small landowners that are doing
that our own,
which we have a few.
Correct.
The next couple of forms are attachments. They're big tables, spreadsheets, and they're to be attached with this annual accomplishment report. One is a paper form that folks can fill out if they are on a paper system, of which we do have several areas that still use paper or not electronic. And then the same form, just in much larger size, which folks can use that are going to be submitting information electronically. So that's the package of forms that we're going to use to implement the extension, as well as those folks that are requesting extension from here going forward. They're pretty much final. We have some very minor, I think, copy editing to do, just make sure everything's very clear, easily understood, that sort of thing. But for the most part, they are complete, and we're getting ready to start putting them up on the web and have them available for landowners that are going to be requesting the extension.
Just a quick clarification, because I got to attend the briefing, which was really helpful for me. Not all of these forms are going to be required by all landowners with an RMAP, right? This is only for those requesting an extension, but a couple are for...
The first three, I think, are for the extension, and then the last one is for... That's the annual accomplishments and work plan.
Okay. That just wasn't very interesting.
And then the last thing I wanted to know was just the next, if you flip over the page from the forms, you'll get to the annual accomplishment report. I wasn't going to go over that, but there's an explanation of each reporting element, and then the back page is a table with a state roll-up of where we are today, our best estimate of our RMAP completion. Questions on what I've just laid out to you?
Darren, before you move on, I just want to point out this has been a tremendous workload for the staff. One of our key individuals who worked on this is not here presenting the forms, Julie Sackett. So we do, whether she's here or not, we want to thank her for all her work. When I was reviewing the annual report, and I would encourage everybody to, it's fairly short, just a few pages, there's a lot of good detail in here about how exactly the information is being captured and sort of what we're planning on doing going forward. We have learned through our operational review that we really had different methods of collecting this information, and I really commend the staff for working across all our regions to ensure they still had a system they could use, but that it has a similar definition. Now all of our regions use the same terminology with the same type of reporting, so consistency across the state is really important for us, and it may seem like an easy step to get to, but it's not. So I commend you for that work, and I appreciate it, and I would recommend to the board that everybody read this. And when you look at the 1,700 miles of fish habitat open and 3,700 fish passage barriers corrected, I think we're on a pretty good tack, so let's keep up the good work.
Yeah, I guess I would just add, while this has been all-consuming for several of our folks in the division, we have a lot of help with this, and I don't think we could have gotten here without it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Thanks to everyone. Thank you. Mark's going to cover the rule, Donnell's going to cover the board manual, and we'll circle back to the action items.
I have a question about one of the forms, and if you're going to get to it later, I can defer it, about the prioritization.
Go ahead, shoot.
So assuming that the landowner fills this out and comes up with a ranking for each of the road management blocks, I think is the key individual item there. Each will have a numeric value that can serve to rank. Is there a requirement to follow that ranking, or is there still a landowner choice of where they put work?
I think it's... I wasn't as close to this as these two, so I'll give you my response and they can clarify if I'm off base. I think it was intended to be a general guide, recognizing that sometimes we're going to deviate based on other circumstances, but generally this should be the priority that we're proceeding on, and over time, the accomplishment reports should reflect that in a general sense. Not that it's going to be to the letter, recognizing that sometimes you've got equipment available in a certain area, you're going to go there, fix that problem first, rather than maybe this high priority one that you haven't gotten to yet. Those types of things, I think, are fine.
Okay, that's exactly what I'm getting at. So there is some flexibility, obviously.
Absolutely.
If we're hitting lowest priority first and highest priority last, we may have an issue. But it, right. As long as we're in the top tier, yeah. Probably not a problem.
Good. The instructions describe that.
Okay, the next part is the rules. The board has the rules in your packet. Just to briefly describe the changes in the rules, it does provide the ability for landowners to request an extension for up to 5 years. There's a requirement for the DNR to provide up to 45 days for review by ecology, wildlife, and interested state tribes and interested stakeholders. There's the requirement that was added at the main meeting by the board for landowners to use standardized forms, of which Darren has just covered with you folks. There's also the notification element for landowners every time the DNR takes an enforcement action on our map. In addition to that, at the conclusion of the public hearing process, DNR staff would like to recommend the board consider extending the time frame on to complete the RMAPs within the years. So if you stay with 2016, we recommend extending the time frame to October 31st and then October 31st to 2021. This allows landowners to have a complete operating season. In many instances, the HPA window doesn't even open until July 1. So it's kind of a not giving them much time to complete much work. So we have included that in the rule language. To summarize the public hearing process, we held three of them in Cedar Woolley, Port Angeles, and Centralia. I believe we received 13 comments. Everybody was very supportive of the extension request. There were some concerns expressed about the forms. Again, though, this has been a very dynamic process, and we want to thank stakeholders for their help. People really, really pitched in, helped us resolve the issues. These forums are actually a very good byproduct of the process. Your packet also contains the written response from the hearings. You have the draft CES, the concise explanatory statement, which again is kind of answering all the comments. And you have the cost benefit analysis in SBEIS. There is one correction that staff is going to make in the cost benefit analysis in the summary section, where it says that the board determined that the proposed rule will not result in significant impact. It should read the DNR. Determined that the proposed rule will not result in significant impact. The responsible official for the board is the Commissioner of Public Lands, and the responsible official made that determination. I also would like to say that the CEPA process received no comments except for the comment that we receive on every CEPA from Department of Ecology. I'll read it to you folks. It's in the memo, and states that Ecology's comment focused on testing potentially contaminated media if known or suspected during construction, also contamination. So the groundwater was readily visible. It was revealed by testing. Ecology must be notified. We received that comment on all of our CEPAs.
Thank you.
Every time.
Yeah, are there any questions? We're going to wait on the motion.
This is on the cost-benefit analysis. all through from page 5, 6, 7, 8, so forth, it always just says large landowners. So either we take the large out and just say forest landowners, or we do large and small, like we did within the rule.
That's appropriate. We'll make that change. Because there are, there's not very many, but there are a number of small landowners that do have on this.
Right. I just don't want those small number of landowners left out.
We'll include them.
I understood from the discussion about the forms that you were contemplating perhaps asking for a delayed implementation date. Is that still needed, or are you?
Yes.
Oh. Thank you. As a result of, as Darren has pointed out, all of the work that has taken place to prepare the forms and the necessary changes to the forms, staff is also requesting a delay effective date of this rule until October 3rd. And it's about 3 weeks of additional time, which will allow staff to get the forms completed. And again, just the minor clerical edits, and then to be able to post them. And most importantly, to allow staff to get the word out, to make sure that people are aware of the rule change. So it gives us time to go to TFW meetings or the regions to, we will post the rulemaking and make every effort that all landowners are aware of the rule change.
Thank you for that, Tom. So just so it wasn't lost on the board at all, the one substantive change from when we last heard this was moving the time within the year from June 1st to...
July 1 till October 31.
Thank you. So that the actual work season, the full work season can be used. So I just want to make sure the board was aware of that. I don't think we had any concerns raised with that, because I think most folks believe that you had a work season to do that work. Okay. Any other questions on the rule? We will circle back before we take our last action. Okay, Donnell.
Okay, last but not least is the board manual. I want to thank all the stakeholders. We had some really short time windows for things to get done, and everybody came through, created a really good board manual together, and I appreciate that. My name is Donnell Mahan. And good afternoon, everyone. The board manual incorporated three components. One of the major ones was the adaptive management programs committee extension recommendations, which Darren and Mark have covered extensively. The other component that came to you May 10th was the Ron Malley petition regarding SLASH. That was also incorporated into the board manual. And last was a component that came from one of the SAG groups and was presented to policy. We decided to move forward. They voted to go forward into the board manual, which was some clarification regarding disconnect when implementing drainage structures adjacent to streams, and just going into further detail to help explain to everyone what they would need on the landscape. Most of the RMAP extension process is contained in 2.1 within the board manual. I know that's down in the weeds, but it's really a condensed. So for your reference, if you want to review that, that would kind of give you the nuts and bolts that incorporate not only the forms, components of the forms and the rule, but so that everyone can implement this on the landscape if they choose to do an extension, and hopefully easily. But the instructions with the forms will also help do that as well. That's it. Are there any questions?
No questions on the board manual. Okay. Let's move to general discussion back to the rule. Were you going to add anything else at that point?
Unless there's questions, no, I didn't have anything to add, so we can go right to the rule, which is the first action request.
Okay.
So before us today is final adoption of the RMAP extension rule. That's the CR 103. If there is, the board needs to take action on this. We have a motion drafted. If there is interest in putting the motion out there and having discussion, we can proceed. Yes, Mark.
I'd like to add just a little clarification on the extension of the operating season. This point was brought forward in the rulemaking process during the public hearings. Many landowners expressed a desire to be allowed to have a complete operating season. So staff has supported that request.
Thank you for that clarification, that was something that came forward in the public comment period. Great. Thank you. Tom?
I'd like to make a motion.
Please do.
I'll use the one that's on the board there to make sure I say it right. I move that the Forest Practices Board adopt the rule proposal amending WAC 222-24-050-051 as presented by staff. This rulemaking provides landowners the opportunity to request an extension of the performance period for their road maintenance and abandonment plans. I further move to direct staff to file a CR 103 rulemaking order with the Office of Code Revisor that specifies an effective date for the rule of October
3rd, 2011. Second. Thank you. Motion properly supported. Yes,
I just let me add at this point, I really appreciate all the work you guys have done on this and all the contributors at our last board meeting. When we were advancing this, there was a whole lot of discussion about the forms and whatnot, and it was a matter of real concern, and I think you guys just handled it very well. I know it was a lot of staff work every time, but very much appreciated. It feels like we've got a very good product here, very responsive to industry, and at the same time makes improvements to the cooperators to just have a much better sense, better knowledge and tracking of how we're proceeding with this very important element of forests and fish. So thanks so much for that great work.
Discussion?
Yes. Just echo that gratitude on Fish and Wildlife's part, for both on DNR's part and the rest of the board. And it was a lot of discussion at the last meeting, but we feel like this is, as Tom mentioned, much better product for everyone. So thank you for your continued dialogue and help.
Great.
Yeah, I should have added at the moment of making the motion that this is one of the, it's not an asterisk up there, but it's an asterisk WAC that ecology concurs with this rulemaking.
Thank you, Tom. Other discussion on the rule prior to vote? Tom.
I too want to thank the staff for their work on this, and maybe just as far as this discussion, the long-term plan, maybe to clarify as to, as far as the use of these forms, that as time and funding allows, will these become electronic documents?
Yes, thank you for that. Initially, they're going to be available electronically, but folks are going to have to basically download them and print them. But yes, our intent is to move everything to a dynamic environment where you can fill it out online and submit. But we're a little short on capacity right now, but we're working in that direction.
Speaking for ourselves as a private landowner, and I think for many others, we are certainly appreciative of the extension. This will definitely provide some relief to some pretty tough couple of years that we've faced this past. Also, again, thanks to the staff at the regions and here in Olympia. I've worked with both areas and helping to come up with all of this, and I think these will be good things for us too. It's not just a benefit to the other stakeholders. It will actually be of some benefit to landowners. Thank you.
And just before we call for the vote, I just want to point out what a great program this is, this RMAP program. I just was bragging to a reporter this morning about this
particular program. There's a lot of interest in this topic right now, and this program has really served the state well. And as I said to the reporter this morning, we thank our landowners for their tremendous investment in the roads because it's made a huge difference. So we should all be very proud of this program. So. Okay, and with that, any other last discussion on the motion? With that, we'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay, unanimous. Thank you. Thank you, board. That concludes a long rulemaking. It's always nice to have that completed. Yeah, exactly. Okay, we are a little ahead of schedule.
Board manual.
Oh, the board manual, excuse me. Right. I was wondering why you guys weren't moving. All right, excuse me. The ever-important board manual, which shows us how to implement these rules. My apologies. So I believe we have a motion also prepared. There's the copy of the board manual in your packets. And that is available. Somebody would like to make one. Tom?
Sure. I move that the Forest Practices Board approve Board Manual Section 3 guidelines for forest roads, and I further move to allow staff to make minor editorial changes if necessary prior to distribution.
Second.
Thank you, Norm. Discussion?
I'd like to state one thing really quickly. Since you approved the rule and approved changing it from July 1 to October 31, that will be one of the first minor changes that happens to our manual.
Yes. Thank you for that clarification, Danielle. Okay. Any other discussion on the board manual? Okay. We'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. And with that, you're not
done. Still there.
Yes, Mark.
One more little comment on the FFFP program.
Okay.
As part of this proposal, there was a recommendation to request funding through the federal government for both FFFP as well as counties, and that then you could begin to address complete stream systems. That money has not come through from the federal government. However, the state legislature appropriated $2 million towards FFFP during this biennium. In addition to that, we are seeking funding through NRCS and a potential grant opportunity using monies from BPA. So we are making our best effort to continue to fund this program to find additional monies available. And we will continue to pitch the legislature for funding of this program.
Thank you for that. That's something I think we want to make sure we don't overlook, which is this was a package of items, and completion of the rule is one of those, but we still have other pieces that we all need to continue to work on. So thank you for that. Darren?
And I might as well go too. Thank you for that segue, because what I wanted to add was, while this was a lot of work getting to this point, it's really just beginning. We have to make this work out on the ground. And you know, sometimes we complete a complex, complicated, long drawn out rulemaking process and we say, oh, okay, done with that, let's move on to the next thing. Well, not really. We still have a lot of work to do to make this system ready and workable for when folks start applying for an extension and then making it work out on the ground. So I'm just a pitch for everyone to continue to stay involved and pay attention, because there's still a lot of work to come.
Great. Question. One question. Yes, go ahead,
Chair. Darren, do you have any sense of how many landowners are going to apply for the extension?
Not specifically, but I think most.
Really?
Yeah. I've heard of a handful of folks that aren't, you know, from regions, have given us feedback that they have a handful that may not, but I think by and large most will.
So that's what, 17, 18 large landowners?
We're actually not tracking by landowner now, we're tracking by RMAP. I think we have 262 different RMAPs. Some landowners have multiple RMAPs. So we're tracking at the RMAP level or at the landowner level. So that's the number we're keeping our eye on, of that, how many are going to seek an extension. We think a fair majority of them will.
Okay.
So you're seeing a fairly heavy load then in the regions?
Yes.
Yeah. Last comments on our map? Okay, we are ahead of schedule, but we're going to go ahead and take our break now, and we'll be back at 2:45 to conclude with our remaining items. Sure.